Hey, I'm Troy Bronsink, and this is From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. Our full episode has two parts, a conversation and a guided meditation. Each week, we try to connect you to a variety of contemplative teachers, hearing their story as well as sharing a meditative practice. If you don't have time right now to hear their story, just take a look at the show notes for when the meditation portion begins and feel free to skip ahead. We've also noticed that just that transition between the passive listening to the story and the active work of meditation can be a little jarring. So we've also created pocket practices, a way to simply drop into the meditation when that's a good time. So you can look for that later in the week. Today we talk with designer and producer Brad Wise. He is this spark of contagious hope, and he does this through storytelling, both as creative officer at Rebel Pilgrim Creative Agency, as well as executive director with Bespoken Live, which we'll talk about quite a bit together. In our conversation, we talk about this hosting vulnerable space, which they do such a good job of, and how that's itself a communal contemplative practice, as well as how that can become a solitude practice for individuals, and that can really inform the ways that you engage with others in the world. Now, you could be doing a million different things right now while listening. It might be time to be weeding between the green beans, or maybe you're paying the bills from vacation. That said, why not just take a look around you for a second, take a couple breaths, and enjoy listening. Hopefully, you'll be able to sit and meditate with us in the second half. Well, this is From the Hive, and I'm Troy Bronsink, and today I'm with Brad Wise with Bespoken Live. Brad, it's good to be with you.
Good to be with you, man.
Gosh, I'm trying to think when we first met, but we've had a number of coffee conversations and interaction at your space and at our space at the Hive, but I'm really looking forward to kind of hearing today more about kind of the contemplative roots to the work that y'all do with Bespoken Live. So just to kind of start out, would you share a little bit with folks what Bespoken Live is and kind of the genesis of that in just a couple minutes?
Sure. Yeah, so Bespoken Live, I tell people we're a storytelling nonprofit where we have no agenda other than just getting people together in a room to share our stories, to listen to each other. And what we were trying to do is just add a little understanding, a little hope that comes from listening to each other. I often ask people when they come in and share a story to try their best not to really have any agenda other than just sharing a personal moment in time. And that's hard. We get a lot of like former burnout pastors who are good speakers and still want to talk, and they have a hard time of like just leaving it at that. But I think there's real power when we just share vulnerable and funny and hard, good moments that have, you know, the wide range of emotions. When we can just share those moments together, that something happens where everybody in the room just feels a little less alone. Mm-hmm. They feel like, oh, I'm not the only one that feels that insecure. I'm not the only one that feels that way. When we just share those moments with each other, something really powerful happens. And when we first started off, we wanted to do a show really because we had a bunch of just friends in our network that had weird skills. Like, they were good at telling stories. There was improv comedians, there was musicians, and we just wanted to do something together on a stage. And so we picked a four-letter word around Valentine's Day. We picked KISS. And we just thought, let's just use that as the jumping point, and we'll all just bring sort of our, I don't know if you want to call it a bag of tricks, but just bring our skills to an event and just see what happens. And that first show that we had, it was transcendent. Like something magical happened in the room. People of all walks of life, whether they had a faith background or atheist friends or just, and everything in between, just afterwards, there was just like this buzz and glow in the room of, what was that? Like, why was that so powerful?
Yeah.
And once we got a taste of it, it was just, let's keep trying to figure it out. Keep bringing people together to tell stories. And so last year in 2016, we were doing shows about every month. And when it got to be the sort of election season at the height of the political divide, something happened where it wasn't just enough for storytellers from a stage to be sharing their stories. It felt like it needed to be a little more of this collective sharing experience.
Right,
and that's what kind of led us to this contemplative practice of, like, I could say to you, like, tell me a story from when you were a kid. And that open blank canvas would just leave you a little bit paralyzed. Mm-hmm. You need a little bit more, like, grounding work to get to a good story. And so I would just start leading people in, I guess you would call it guided meditation, but I have no background or no training in that at all.
Yeah.
But what I do have a background in is, I'm a filmmaker and a designer, where I've just learned to ask the right questions to get to the heart of good stories. And so I just ask those questions and get people to think back in moments of their life that then trigger sort of story-centric conversations. And every time we did it, it would just be very powerful. I'd be asking these questions and I would look up in the room and people are wiping away tears, and they would break off into groups and share with each other. And just, again, it was just another way of making people feel less alone, just in more of a all-inclusive way. It wasn't just the storyteller on stage. It wasn't just the expert in the room. Like, everyone was storytellers. And that was what launched kind of our contemplative thing.
It's so powerful. So we started the Hive around the same time. I remember us we'd meet sometimes kind of scratching our heads about what y'all were beginning to launch, what we were beginning to launch. And as we've gotten clearer about how practice works in an individual way, someone that has like a individual solitude practice, and then learning from folks like Art of Hosting and others that there's your own practice, and then you're hosting conversations, and then you're part of a conversation, and then that becomes kind of a communal practice. I think y'all are one of the examples of how those principles of solitude practices aren't always exclusive to solitary experiences. So that sense of not having an agenda so much when we do internal work, we project a lot on the agenda of that internal work. Am I improving by being still? Meister Eckhart would talk about kind of our vision of God being like an eye. And he says, the eye through which I see God is the eye through which God sees me. So some of the practice in a solitude role is opening, dilating and opening that space so that there's not an agenda. Who is God? Who am I? But more like, can I hold some open space? And I think it relates, I'm just hearing the way you're talking about this, the way that that even relates to loneliness, that in the stillness, you're not alone because you're not doing a lot of comparative work. You're able to just be present. And it sounds like Rabbi Miriam and some other folks that I know have been real involved with some of your work just said, like, how that practice, it's palpable in the room. And I know, even at the bespoken events I've been at, that there's you can feel it change the texture and the energy of the room. There's a type of intimacy, even though everybody didn't just get intimate, right? Like, there's a freedom that comes because somebody dared to be vulnerable. Kind of that Brené Brown wholehearted stuff, right? That they opened that space, and the container that y'all are holding says this will be safe right now.
Yeah, there's some, I don't know, you know, we're still pretty young. So I'm still trying to just analyze, like, why is what we're doing actually working? You know what I mean? I don't know. We're intentional about some things, obviously. We're not just winging it, but why does it go to the transcendent place? Why does it feel so safe? I think part of it, a huge part of it, is the vulnerability aspect. And then there's also just something powerful. Anne Lamott has one of my favorite quotes where she says, laughter is carbonated holiness.
Mm-hmm.
And so at our events, we try to make sure, when I work with the storytellers, like, make sure you got some some humor. I always say, do you remember the old TV show Scrubs? Because they were the masters at making you laugh, and then they would nail you with something vulnerable or something dramatic. Like that laughter opens people up. So we're pretty intentional of starting off the night trying to get people laughing, get people comfortable. And then, yeah, I think we're all so busy, right? Like none of us take the time to actually just sit and be quiet. And recently a friend was describing, he was working on a contemplative service at his church, and he stumbled upon this old story where they described contemplation and meditation as like the wise fisherman who waits for the sea to calm, because then it turns clear and they can see down into the depths and they can then find the fish that they're looking for. Whereas like the immature fisherman, like they just rush and fish when the waves are up and the muck is all over the place and it's cloudy and they can't see anything, and then they wonder why they're not catching anything. And I think that just quieting ourselves is just so hard. We're just so busy that when there's a safe space for it to happen and you do it to like the right music and you speak in like just that calm, slower tone. I mean, even just that, I think it's just so jarring that it wakes you up a little bit and you, I don't know. It's been a fascinating journey.
Why do you think there's any connections to your own life or as like an entrepreneur in this nonprofit sector where this vulnerable component has kind of shown up for you? Like what about this enterprise is still unknown and scary, or like what makes it tell me a little more about the challenge and maybe what sort of risks or fears come up when you're stewarding this kind of possibility in the room or kind of organization?
Oh my gosh, fears, it's always there. It's like, it's never, you know, we have a show coming up this week and I'm like, is anybody going to show up? Is it going to be any good? Are they all going to laugh at us? Like, you know, every single time I get up and do anything, I did one of these contemplative guided meditation things at a church service for Good Friday.
Humor in it or no?
Well, no humor in that one, but I had like moments before my wife like leans over, she goes, do you know what you're going to do yet? And I said, no.
Shut up. Don't ask that.
Don't ask that. And there's this like, well, what if it doesn't work? What if it doesn't work? Like, I think that's what always plagues me. But I'm also weirdly, I think, addicted to that as well. Like we keep shifting things at every one of our shows. We try something different because it's been my experience is that when say a storyteller backs out or you're going to do something completely different than you've ever done and take that risk, is that all of a sudden that opens up this whole other world. And that happened with this, like the whole doing the guided meditation stuff, it came out of something went wrong. Like we needed to fill the space with something more meaningful. And so like, well, let's try this and see if it works. So there's that constant fear of, when you're vulnerable, when you put yourself out there, there's a good shot that it may not work. And, you know, I was talking to Joey after that Good Friday experience.
Mm-hmm. Taylor, our producer. Yeah.
Yeah. Just that week, you know, on that Monday, I had been invited by Rabbi Miriam to go do this at a Seder dinner. And I started to think, man, it just feels like some doors are opening to do these sort of things. Like maybe I should record like a series and put it out on a podcast and just lead people through some of this stuff. And then immediately, once you like have that vulnerable thought, fear creeps in, your ego creeps in that wants to protect you from the potential of rejection and failure. And that whisper of like, who are you? Like, what do you're a graphic designer by trade. You have no idea what you're doing. You don't even know why this works. Like, they're all going to laugh at you. Don't do it. It's going to fail. You don't have time. Just all of those things. And I was like, okay, you're right. Like, they're actually pretty legit reasons not to do it, really. You know, it's rooted in truth of some brand. But then after that Good Friday thing, Joey and a couple other people just shared, like, you know, thanks for doing this. Thanks for making space for me to experience this. And I thought, you know what? Screw it. I'm gonna do it. There's that quote that there's grace, power, and magic in action. And I'm gonna actually take that little voice that's saying, don't do this. You can't do it. Who are you? I'm gonna take that as a clue that I'm onto something, and it's worth the risk. Like, yes, it may not work, but it's worth, let's put something out there, and it'll actually be kind of this meta thing where, like, I'm going to create this series that goes along the hero's journey in the creative process of stepping out and entering into a new world to face new challenges. I'm going to help people do that because I really believe we all have something in us that needs to get out. Mm-hmm. And maybe this guided meditation can help people get that out, but I'm going to be doing it like at the same time I'm helping people do it, if that makes any sense.
It does. I actually want to throw another a curve on that and go, have you then started to see as you're identifying that voice that does have some truth to it? I like the way you said that, and then go, like, it's an indicator that I'm going into approaching sacred space, that these warnings are coming up. Have you seen, it'd be interesting to explore a little bit with you story-wise even, have you seen that translate into things outside of that practice and discipline, like in a relationship or in work or in an encounter where the practice is giving you the tool, see if I can repeat back to you what I heard you say, this practice begins to give you the tool to become more mindful and aware of, emotions, particularly negative, fearful emotions, and how they often determine or limit possibilities. And and so you're creating these containers where folks are able to try to trust more than that signal on their dashboard, to stay in just a little bit longer. And as they do, they begin to discover the miraculous, the other, that transcendent. Can you think of an instance where any of that's happened with your kids or work or something else where that same kind of mindfulness or awareness generalizes into another area?
Yeah. You know, there's that, I think what happens often is we have like two blink thoughts that happen, like they can feel at the same exact time, but really there's one that happens like right before that fear and that doubt and that sort of skillful liar starts to take over. Mm-hmm. And that moment where you feel centered's not the right word, but I'm thinking like often at work, I'll have like an immediate idea of, oh, this is the solution to that problem, whether it's we're doing a commercial or we're doing, you know, a web video. Like there'll be that idea, that blink quick idea of, it's just a gut feeling that gets me like for a hot second, it gets me like excited at the potential. But then like coming right after it is then just like, nah, that's stupid. And what I've learned is to not focus on that one, to be like, that's kind of the clue for what's happening. So yeah, at work, it happens all the time where you just have to trust. There's those two voices that come at you right away. And you got to learn that the negative one's not always the right one. Sometimes it is, of course, but, and then even as a parent, I just had an experience, with my son, where he wanted to like go down this slide or do this thing. And he was so wanting to do it so bad, but he just couldn't do it because of fear. And it just got to be this like crazy thing. And like the ego part of me, like the dad with a son, wanted to be like, suck it up, buddy. Like, come on. Because his little sister, who's 2.5 years younger than him, was like doing it right away. And there's that like gut reaction of wanting to have that kind of reaction. But in the moment when he was like really like crying, I realized that like in my gut, what I felt was this shame thing that he was like experiencing, like I was experiencing it at the same time with him. Mm-hmm. And that if I were to just like push him or like say something mean, like, come on, even your sister can do it. Oh, yeah. That's just me trying to like displace my shame to him. And so in like a split second moment, thank God, I just told him it's okay.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
Buddy, it's okay. And that's when I do the guided meditation stuff so often, you know, I'll ask a question or I'll get to a point and I'll end up just saying, I'll get them to like remember something. And then I'll just say, it's okay. Like, it's okay that you failed. It's okay that that relationship failed. It's okay. Mm-hmm. We're all a bunch of messes and screw ups. Like, it's okay. I think we compare ourselves to other people's highlight reels so often. Yeah, and all we look at is our list of failures.
Well, and I think you've definitely modeled this and shown this to me and others as well. A lot of our, that sacred space, it's almost like the old notion of art that like transgression is necessarily part of art, that like mm-hmm. you're walking over what would otherwise be a boundary. And that otherness of the moment, you go, ah. And so in the same way, going into a place that is traumatic, that you've survived that story by telling it another way. You've survived it by domesticating it. And to create a container where somebody can let the story live again and the community can grieve with you through it or celebrate with you through it. And it's you don't have the same kind of control over it. It sounds like that's it, that itself is a practice, because then when you see your son or anybody else that's kind of triggering or reenacting a shame or a trauma, you're able to have some empathy because you've practiced this as part of your gig. You've helped people practice self-empathy, and you, that dopamine. I yesterday we learned that in the trauma class we're doing at the Hive that that you get double the dopamine by walking somebody through this affirmation than if you were just doing it for yourself. So a community practice has that kind of heaviness, that kind of gravity to it.
Yeah. I just like, what I keep coming back to and what I think is the biggest problem right now is this sense of aloneness, mm-hmm. this sense of loneliness. I think it's why we're so politically divided, you know, because everyone feels so alone. So what do? You try to find people who think like you, and then you just enter into whatever your echo chamber is. Mm-hmm. And I've had so many experiences at work and spiritually and just everywhere of when you get around a group of people and feel less alone, it changes everything. And so I just keep coming back to that of like, okay, how can I find different ways to just say to people, both good and bad, like you're not, you know, we're part of making the Super Bowl commercial for Cincinnati Bell. And some of the scenes were like people at the Esquire Theater and people at Price O' Chili. And it was, even that's a sense of like, you're not alone. You're not, we see what you see, that Price O' Chili is the place to get chili. That Esquire is the place to get, to go see a movie. Like when people see what we see, I remember when I had a pen pal in fourth grade who lived in, he lived in Oklahoma City. And I remember writing him, I don't know why I remember this. I remember saying, do you have the family ties in Oklahoma City? And I think like, I just wanted to know, like, are you seeing what I'm seeing? Like, and you think about the just Instagram, like everyone's posting stuff of like, just look, see what I'm seeing. I want to know that other people are with me in this. Like they can see and feel and experience what I'm seeing because it's so intense. But we don't even know what to do with it. And oftentimes we just numb ourselves.
So if you're not from Cincinnati, you don't know that at noon on Wednesday, sirens.
Can you hear it?
Yeah, we've got it. Well, I heard it in my neighborhood and now I'm hearing it in yours. This is funny.
So funny.
This is part of the real-time vulnerability of our work.
I remember the first time my son heard that, it was right when he was starting to get obsessed with tornadoes. And he was just like, is there a tornado?
Oh, yeah.
It's no, like, no, they're just testing it.
It still feels like war movies I watched because I didn't grow up with sirens every first Wednesday of the month. It's kind of creepy.
Hilarious.
Oh, well. This has been great. We're gonna take a turn in a second here and invite you to kind of guide us through a practice the way that you've been doing that. But I want to ask a question first about your own practice. So, like, sometimes I've worked with entrepreneurs and activists and other folks, and we're talking about the things we do in public, and then there's a little bit of like, how do we sustain that? So I'm just curious, is there anything you do with a regular rhythm, a daily rhythm, or a consistent rhythm that stabilizes you for this other work that kind of it tends to root your work practice-wise?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I probably the two things I do most consistently, like walking. Does a lot for me. So what I do in the mornings, like I work downtown Cincinnati. I'll park at a different spot, like far away from my office, 10 plus blocks. And I'll put some music in, and that having like a new route to walk, like in the mornings, just allows me to like process what's going on. And at night I'll take my dog for a walk, and that there's just something about both the physical activity and like changing it up that as you're walking, you're seeing and hearing new things. that does something for me, and it helps me get unlocked, and it helps me, like when you're leaving work, I have a bit of a commute, but that's stressful too. But when I have that long walk then to my car, I can like rehash the day. I can figure out like what triggered me during the day? Why did I get upset about that? How did my ego get hurt during the day? And sort of get that out through that walk. So that's one thing that I do, just like long walks with some good music. And it always seems like it's weird. Like music will, the right song with the right lyric will be right at the right time for me, and it'll help me process something or trigger a new idea.
Yeah.
And then I just like, I'll meet with people who I find really interesting and just have really, I try to have vulnerable conversations with people I trust, both new and old. So I schedule a lot of morning coffees, probably one at least a week, with just some people where we can talk about the deeper things in life, and I get to hear what they're wrestling with, and then just watch as the synchronicity happens, where this conversation about abundance starts showing up with three other people, and we're all on the same wave.
There we go.
And that connection that Julia Cameron calls it synchronicity in the artist's way.
Yeah. Jung stuff. Yep.
You just start being like, oh yeah, I'm not the only one that's feeling this and dealing with this. And then you get that person's, the quote that stood out for them, and you get that person's podcast recommendation, and you just all sort of accidentally help each other as you're bobbing along on surfboards on the same long wave.
Well, and it also pairs well with what you've been talking about all along, that when you can have a conversation that has enough openness where you don't come with that agenda, where you kind of let down the guard of loneliness, the fear that leads to loneliness, but then the loneliness that reinforces the fear, and it, like, you let those down, that then you begin to recognize it kind of from a unitive way how it's all connected, and you can see where you're bobbing along together. I like that image. It's really good.
Yeah.
Well, Brad Weiss, this has been just a blast to hear both your work, but then kind of the heart underneath it, that that courageous space where you're still in the middle of doing things that you don't completely understand or even know how they work till you jump into them. And so thanks so much for just holding that space with us today.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. It's good chatting with you as always.
That's good, man. So for our for the guided meditation, we're going to do something a little different. You've shared with us a meditation that you had used with one of the latest episodes of Bespoken called Leap. Just tell us a little bit about what that event is like and what folks should expect to hear.
Yeah. So we do some, one of our shows, we call them morning shows because we do them in the morning.
Okay.
At Rose Street Cafe. And we just get a couple storytellers. And then I lead people through a very simple time of reflection and meditation. And so that's what this is. It was just around the four-letter word, leap. So give it a listen.
There we go. And typically then folks are just having coffee, and then afterwards, what's happening with them?
Yeah. So they come in, they have coffee. You know, there's obviously the meet and greet time. They listen to some stories. We go through the meditation, and then we break up into smaller groups, and you just share the stories that, that got triggered of going through the meditation. And I think that's why people keep coming back. It's for those moments of when they get to break off into community, because that's where the magic of truly feeling not alone happens.
That's terrific. Cool. Well, I'm looking forward to that. Before we go, anything you want to share about what Bespoken Live is up to in the year ahead, or ways for folks to follow you? We'll obviously put all the URLs in the show notes and stuff.
Yeah. You know, we find just different ways to get people together. So like our next morning show is July 13th. We haven't picked the four-letter word yet. So if you have any ideas, you can always comment on Facebook. But probably Facebook is, for better or for worse, where we do most of our communication. So if you can follow us along there, that'd be great. And then you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and SoundCloud. And just if the meditation, if it works for you and you dig it, just keep an eye out for the series that I'm going to be putting out. It's going to be called The Boon Meditations. And it's this idea that when the hero leaves his home to go enter into a new world, when they slay the dragon, they get the boon that they've been searching for, that they get to bring back home to serve and help their community. And so keep an eye out for that podcast series.
Awesome. Well, Brad Wise, your name is two four-letter words, in case nobody's pointed that out.
So right.
You got perfect. That going for you. We'll be back with you shortly. Thanks so much, man.
Hey there, you've been listening to From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. I'm your host, Troy Bronsink. I'm also the founder and director of The Hive, a center for contemplation, art, and action. We're located in the Northside neighborhood of Cincinnati. Our secret sauce is getting folks together in groups to develop daily practices. We do this through 6 to 8 week classes, events, interviews, a number of those things. We've got a number of great classes coming up in July, and I just want to share a few of them with you. One is a class I'll be teaching on inhabiting prayers of the mystics, everything from Rumi to Meister Eckhart to Teresa of Avila and others. That'll be on Thursday nights. 10 a.m. on Wednesday mornings, Paige Wideman will be teaching a class on play and creativity. We're also really excited. On Monday nights, we'll be hosting a class, Enneagram Practicing Receptive Presence, with Alice Connor and Leslie Hirschberger, who both have done a lot of work in that space. Leslie particularly will be leading some panels. Hopefully you can join us for that or other classes. You can check them out at cincyhive.org for more information about how to get involved. Well, welcome back to From the Hive. I'm Troy Bronsink, the host, and we're meeting with Brad Wise. It's been a great conversation about Bespoken Live and storytelling and vulnerability. Thanks for being with us, man.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Give us a quick setup of what we're about to hear and how someone can kind of deepen this practice and drop into it.
Yep. So this is a meditation exercise that we did at one of our morning shows at Rose Street Cafe. And I think it works best if you can find a place to just get quiet in your home. It works best, I think, when you can close your eyes. If you're driving, I think it can work. Obviously, don't close your eyes when you're driving. But there's two parts of it. It always works best if you do it with a friend. So I would share this with a friend after you go through it that you think might connect with it. Because what we do at the morning shows is after you go through the meditation, then we break off into small groups and we share the stories that kind of got triggered. And something powerful I think might happen is if you do this with a friend and then you guys grab a coffee afterwards and just share the stories that you experienced. But just get quiet, put your feet on the ground, close your eyes, and just enjoy.
Make sure that you're in a relaxed position and just start with a deep breath in, slow, and then out. Take another just deep breath in, nice and slow, and out. Pay attention to the feeling that might just be resting in your gut. Let's go ahead and collectively name that physical sensation that we have right now as thanks, appreciation for the gift of getting to come together and just listen and hear stories, to see real moments. I don't want to rush past what just happened. So in your own way, just honor that however you see fit. So maybe think back to when you were younger. Was there ever a time where you took some sort of leap, some sort of risk that surprised you? Maybe it's silly, maybe there was a dare on the school ground. A moment where someone said, you can't do that, and then you proved them wrong. A moment in school where you just did something unexpected, where you surprised yourself and your friends and your family. Who was there? What happened? What did it feel like to take that leap, to take that risk? Were you scared? When you did that, what happened? Did you succeed? Did you fail? Frankly, both are great. Did you learn anything about yourself by taking that leap? Let's move forward in time just a little bit. Maybe into your young adult years. When you think about that time period, when you think about this idea of taking a leap, does something come to mind immediately? A person, a place, a moment. Why do you think that moment, if one did, came back to mind right now? In those young adult years, was there a relationship where you had to take the leap of opening yourself up in a new way? Did you do it? In that moment of taking that risk, of being vulnerable, of stepping out in some way, what did you learn about yourself in that moment? Good or bad, because it's all good. I want to spend some time just thinking about the right now. As you heard stories today of people opening themselves up, people taking risks and jumping in, of watching a musician fight through fear and fight through tears, taking that risk of vulnerability in front of us all. Is there something going on in your life where you're feeling that nudge that it's time to jump, that it's time to leap? And is there anything from your past that we conjured up today that gives you a little bit of moxie to take that leap? Take one deep breath in and slowly out. You can open your eyes.
I'm Troy Bronsink, and this has been From the Hive, a contemplative space where meditative practice meets mindful everyday living. Today we've been talking to Brad Wise. Check out the show notes for ways that you can connect with his work, and be on the lookout for the Pocket Practice later in this week, a shorter version that's easier to share. From the Hive is produced by Joey Taylor. We're so grateful for the work that he's done to pull this together, and so I get a little bit off script here and ad lib just to thank him for that, and this is just, I just really messed that up. So here we go.
It's
gonna
be really
thoughtful
and special, though. I was like, what are you gonna say?
Oh, I know. Oh, man. There we go. So thank you for joining us. Take a deep breath and enjoy the day.